Hi, and welcome to America Weekend. This weekend, I'm Valerie Smaldone along with Leslie Gold. Now, if you're a frequent listener, you know that I love to talk about food, trends, restaurants. And so it was a really lovely circumstance that I met one day at a fine restaurant, a gentleman named Robert Satius, who's director of education at the International Culinary Center in New York City, also a location in California. It's a place where there's training for all kinds of work in the restaurant field. Robert was senior editor at Zagat and has an advanced degree from the International Wine Center, so we had a lot to talk about. Robert, welcome to America Weekend.
Thanks for having me, Val.
Well, you know, it really was a happy circumstance meeting you at that fine restaurant that we met just about a month or two ago, because I was very interested to learn about the International Culinary Center, and you are the director of education. What is the demographic of students that you see now enrolling at ICC?
So, thanks again for having me. Our school, the average age of our students hovers around 27 and 28, because it's the nature of our program. It's a fast-paced, very immersive program, and a number of our students are career changers, either career changers or have other jobs. So in 6 months or 9 months, we teach students, we give them professional programs for a number of our students. But we have seen over the past few years sort of a younger demographic, and I think this is partly due to awareness of food and huge interest in food, and also the industry is just growing by leaps and leaps and bounds. So there's so much opportunity. I mean, we have I call them kids, they're not kids, but you know, an 18-year-old who comes in and wants to, you know, run her own restaurant already, and so we see a greater number of students that age. We also have teen camps that we do over the summer, and they usually sell out very, very quickly. But as young as 13, with skills, I watch some of these kids, you know, filleting fish, and I have to rub my eyes. It's pretty amazing. So a greater awareness of food, the food industry, interest and knowledge of the culinary arts, I think, plays a lot.
I have to think, Robert, that the television programming that we see, especially on Food Network, where they have this variety of ages, in fact, they have programming now for young kids who are very into cooking, has affected a population saying, wow, if they can do that, I want to do that too.
It's inspiring. My daughter watches Food Network and the stars of those young kids, and she's inspired, and her friends are inspired, and people like her. It's pretty amazing. It's, you know, 10 years ago, we never would have thought this, almost even 5 years ago, but it's become, it's pretty amazing to watch. And it's great. It's wonderful.
Right.
What's more important than food?
You know, I don't know. I can't think of anything. Honestly, I can't think of anything. Well, you've been in the culinary arts, of course, with your study of wine, with Zagat, and now ICC. In the last, how many years? About 10, 15, 20 years you've been doing this?
About 15 years.
Yeah.
15 years.
Okay.
Yeah,
so your experience has to be very interesting in seeing this trajectory of growth in the restaurant field, and also how the average individual approaches going to a restaurant. It feels almost like we're all little critics ourselves sometimes.
And funny, working for Zagat and seeing critics of the general population can critique restaurants for us and the average consumer, and now the so-called average consumer is no longer average. It becomes so knowledgeable and so discerning about food, and this is really spread. This is beyond the metropolises. We've seen, you know, I was in, for some strange reason, I was in Fargo, North Dakota, 4 months ago, and I couldn't believe the food I ate.
Really?
I mean, I was just totally blown away. And it just goes to show that the seeding of culinary talent, first of all, a number of would-be budding restaurant owners, they can't afford the rents of New York and L.A. and San Fran, so they're seeded, spreading out. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that those consumers in these new markets have become, A, more knowledgeable, and be more demanding, and it's an incredible thing to watch going on in the United States, and it's happening in places you wouldn't think of, like I just mentioned Fargo. So It's like wildfire. It's amazing.
Right. So now tell me a little bit about the kinds of courses that you teach. I know that the courses cover culinary, wine, bread, mm-hmm. pastry, but you also have media courses, which I found very interesting.
We do. We do. Among my favorite, because my background is in media, we have writing classes with Alan Richman, and I don't know, some of your viewers may know who he is. He is one of the foremost food writers, although he would call himself rightfully so a food journalist in the past generation. He's our dean of journalism. So it's a great course. We have a food styling course, which we're actually offering in a few days, and we do it a number of times a year. It teaches people how to style food for media, so magazines, blogs, television, and that is immensely, immensely popular, and it's a fascinating subject. And there are other media subjects. I and the school are keen on expanding, taking a good hard look and expanding into. So we'll see. That's something it's growing, and a number of our students are culinary, are professional culinary, pastry, wine, bread, cake. All of our students are very, very, many of our students are very, very interested in following that track.
So. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I remember I've interviewed several chefs over the years, and years ago, there was a very different look about the chef that you would see, because now it seems like they're all tattooed. They are very cool. They're kind of hip looking. You wouldn't cast them necessarily for a chef, but today you would. There's just a very different look. It's almost, I don't even, it's like a whole new movement that I've noticed over the years.
It is a culture. It's an aesthetic, and it's become part of the culture. I mean, I walk into kitchens sometimes, and I'm surprised if I don't see a tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 10 years ago, it was, you know, hats, neckerchiefs, even though no one wears neckerchiefs now, the thing you tie around your neck and whites, and now it's very different. But, you know, those tattoos belie a lot of really amazing talent. These are really incredible talented people who just dig tattoos, and it just show that, you know, it's the food and the culture of food is really amazing. It's spreading like crazy.
Absolutely. So. And women in the field too. Years ago, very rare to find a woman chef, and now they are exploding and opening their own restaurants and doing amazing things. I'm so proud and thrilled to say that, by the way.
Oh, it's, I mean, in our, for example, in our professional culinary class, it's half women, half. And a few years ago, it wasn't that. So we're overjoyed, and I think there'll be more and more.
Good. I'm speaking with Robert Satius, who's Director of Education at the International Culinary Center in New York City and also in California, right, Robert?
That's right. We have a California campus. It's in Campbell, California. It's about an hour south of San Francisco, and we offer the same similar programs in California. And they have the benefit of having really good weather, too. So,
good weather and good fruit. I always say
good weather.
The fruit there is pretty good.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'll say.
Tell me about one of your students, perhaps, who's never taken a course before, maybe a home chef, and their reaction to being in a professional cooking environment. Do you have a story you can share?
Oh, I have so many. I talk to students all the time about this, and even yesterday, I ran into a student who's now finishing near the end of her studies, and I remember speaking to her in the beginning of the program, and she was shocked at the intensity and the level of stamina that's necessary. And again, someone who knew very little about cooking, and she would say the same thing. And the program, it's so immersive and intensive that you're almost a new person by the time you're done with it.
Mm-hmm.
And a new person, not only your cooking skills, but your discipline and speed, it also affects you in other ways, that you apply that kind of organization and stamina to other facets, other areas of your life. And one of our graduates, Wiley Dufresne, he says, you know, after culinary school, you sort of mise en place your life. Mise en place is a word for setting up one's station, organizing one's cooking station in the kitchen. So the intensity of our programs, and again, we're talking 6 months, it's transformative for people who have never even really held a knife. And I was that person, too. I'm a graduate of the school, and that story is me, also. I knew nothing about food, and I was kind of skeptical and scared, and it was a real shock to be in that setting.
Here you are now, Director of Education, and I would say you did very well, Robert Satius, at the International Culinary Center. Thank you for joining us in America Weekend, Robert.
Thanks a lot, Valerie.
I'm Valerie Smaldon with Leslie Gold on the Envision Radio Network.
Now, Cheap Psych Tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. Are you a perfectionist, a person who strives for perfection in every conceivable way? Would you like to raise a perfectionist child? Well, you might want to rethink that. It's problematic from the start. Here's the science. Hard to believe, even though they work harder, perfectionists make less cash than their colleagues. They're lonelier, experience more guilt, and suffer from mood swings. And here's the coup de grace. If you're a perfectionist, your self-esteem is lower than your less than perfect friends. What's the cheap psychological trick? Perfectionists raise the standards so high they create their own failures and they can spiral out of control. So if this sounds like you, it's tough to admit, but you might want to seek some professional help. Got a question? Contact me at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MYTV.
Order in the court.
This is attorney Jay Coleman with the final verdict. Three neighbors pitched in to buy an expensive Ryder mower for all of them to share equally. For several years, everything went smoothly until Mike decided to move out of state. He demanded that Kevin and Dave buy out his share of the lawnmower, but they say that wasn't part of the agreement. In small claims court, who won this case? The final verdict after this.
Have back taxes taken control of your life, your bank account, your paycheck? It's time to take back control and avoid tax liens, bank levies, garnished wages, and criminal charges. Take control today and call U.S. Tax Shield now at 800-524-6201.
Kevin and Dave have a legal obligation to pay Mike for his share of the lawnmower. However, they're only required to pay Mike one-third of the current value, not one-third of the original price. And that's the final verdict.